Good evening. My name is Diane Goldfarb, and I am with the League of Women Voters of Central New Mexico. I want to welcome all of you this evening on behalf of the League and on behalf of our co-sponsor, the African American Performing Arts Center Foundation. They have been wonderful, wonderful co-sponsors, have done a wonderful job in this nice facility. Thank you all for coming to this forum. We're featuring the candidates for the offices of New Mexico Attorney General and New Mexico Secretary of State. We hope that tonight's forum will not only provide an opportunity for all of you to hear the candidates for these important offices as you make your decision for whom to vote, but also help you become better aware of the responsibilities of these offices and the issues that arise before them. Before we begin, let me tell you just a little bit about who we are, the League. Founded in 1920, the League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization. Our mission is to encourage the informed and active participation of citizens in government and to influence public policy through education and through advocacy. We never support, nor do we ever oppose political candidates or parties. We frequently moderate and keep time for forums such as this one, and you probably know us best for our voter's guide that we publish before each general election. This year's voter's guides will be distributed throughout Bernalillo and Sandoval counties beginning the first week in October in public libraries, community centers, businesses, and a variety of locations. We invite any of you of voting age who are interested in such civic engagement to join us. Just speak to someone at our table in the lobby. I will be moderating tonight's forum, and our timekeeper is Cheryl Haker, who's down on the front row. She's going to be holding up signs letting the candidates know how much time is remaining and sounding a bell if they go over. The rules are as follows. Each of the candidates will be allowed 2 minutes for opening statements, followed by written questions from the audience. The candidates will have a minute and a half to answer each question. The person going first has been decided by the toss of a coin, and I will alternate between the offices and the candidates. They will be allowed 1 minute apiece for closing statements. You all have been given 3x5 index cards on which to write questions. Members, is it better if I hold it down? I don't know if you can hear me if I hold it, if I let it go, but somebody yell at me. Okay. You've all been given 3x5 index cards in which to write questions. Members of the League are going to be collecting them and bring them up to the two people sitting behind me who will sort the questions. And I may reward some of your questions or combine them in an attempt to make them more concise or to avoid duplication. Please direct your questions to both of the candidates for each office. They will both be given an opportunity to answer each question, so please don't direct them to one candidate. Or you can ask a question of all four candidates. Because if you mark your card that way, it will help us, or these people up here will assign them to one office or another. Our forum's goal is to open a civil and enlightening dialogue to enable voters to make informed decisions at the ballot box. Please respect this objective and refrain from making personal comments about the candidates, and please do not applaud, boo, or otherwise show your approval or disapproval of any response. And finally, we ask everyone here to turn both on the stage and in the audience to turn off their cell phones. We are going to start with the Office of Attorney General. And I'm going to give a little bit of background before I introduce the candidates. Just a quick overview of their responsibilities, and I'm sure whatever I leave out, they can add later. The Attorney General is the state's chief legal officer, legal counsel to state government, consumer advocate, and guardian of the public interest. He or she represents the state before any courts or agencies when the public interest requires or when requested by the governor, and defends all cases in courts in which the state is a party or has an interest. The Attorney General prosecutes and defends all actions and proceedings involving any state employee in his or her official capacity. The Attorney General may represent residential or small business consumers before the New Mexico Public Regulation Commission. When requested, the Attorney General will provide written legal opinions to the legislature, any state official, or any district attorney on any subject pending before any of these officials. He or she also provides legal assistance to the Secretary of State on matters involving the state election code. The Attorney General maintains a register of all documents filed by charitable organizations. So that's a bit of an overview of the responsibilities of the New Mexico Attorney General. So I'm going to introduce first our Attorney General candidates and begin with Hector Balderas, who will give a 2-minute opening statement.
Well, good evening. It's an honor to be here. I am your candidate for Attorney General. And I think it's actually fitting that we conduct this forum in such a prestigious building with such a symbolic figure in talking about justice. And that's one of the priorities that I would like to focus on as your Attorney General, is using the powers and authorities as your Attorney General to ensure justice in some of the systems that are intended to protect victims. The second thing I'd like to focus on is ensure that we do everything we can, every tool, every power, to focus on protecting families. And that's families that are in poverty, families that are in the middle class, and families that are doing even better than most deserve all equal protection and deserve a zealous advocate and someone who will be able to stand up and fight the toughest fights for those communities. I believe that I have the background to do this because I was raised in a community that was forgotten many times, and raised in a community where I saw firsthand where struggles occurred and no one came to assist us. And when I became state auditor, I never forgot where I came from, and it's always impacted the way I govern and the way I advocate for communities and using the authority and the powers that are a privilege that you bestow on us when you elect us. We have uncovered some of the largest corruption cases because we choose to fight for those communities. We have a certain amount of independence, a certain amount of aggressiveness, and most importantly, a respect for the taxpayer. I believe that Attorney General's office could benefit all of New Mexico, and it would be an honor to serve you and a privilege to bring justice in New Mexico and fight for New Mexico to make it a better place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Balderas, and I did forget to mention that he is the Democrat running for Attorney General. And now I'd like to introduce the Republican, Susan Riedel. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Well, good evening. I want to tell you that I'm running for Attorney General because I spent 25 years in the service of this community, not this community. I spent 8 years in the service of this community, 25 years in the service of New Mexico in general. I moved down to Las Cruces in 1992, where I continued my service as an assistant district attorney, ultimately becoming the chief deputy district attorney down there. So 25 years as a prosecutor, so I know that I bring to this job the experience that is really required to do what the Attorney General needs to do. I've been in the courtroom. I know how to do this. I've spent my entire life there. The last 2 years of service to the state of New Mexico, I was a district court judge. So even though I wasn't out there arguing, I was still in the courtroom and watching how things go and keeping up with everything that's happening. This job entails taking over the largest law firm in the state of New Mexico. And so you need someone who has experience as a lawyer taking it over. It is time for that office to have a prosecutor and not a politician be running it. Because it isn't just a stepping stone to another place for me. It is the job I want to do for the next 8 years, which is as long as the law will allow me to do that job. I want to make sure that people know the name of the Attorney General in this state, that there is someone there who will stand up not just for victims, because I know what it's like to be a victim. I was a victim of a drunk driver. My husband was killed by a drunk driver about 10 years ago. And so I understand what it's like to be a victim, and I really understand that part, and I know better than anyone how what it feels like to be on that side and I know how special it is to represent people in the courtroom, the ones who don't have the voice. So I want to be the voice for all of New Mexico, not only in the criminal cases, but in those cases in which we just need to stand up and say, we're not going to take it anymore. We know what's best for New Mexico, and we're going to stand up for ourselves. So that's why I'm running for Attorney General. I ask for your support.
Thank you. Now we will hear from the Secretary of State candidates. The Secretary of State of New Mexico is the state's chief election officer. She, and I can say she because both of our candidates are she's, she is responsible for administering elections and enforcing local, state, and federal election laws. Her office maintains a computerized listing of the state's registered voters, tests and evaluates voting machines, and certifies precinct boundary maps. The Secretary of State is also the state government ethics regulator. Those duties include regulating campaign finance and lobbying within the state, and providing ethics training to various parties involved in state government. The Secretary of State also maintains records vital to commerce and industry in New Mexico. This includes filing of security interests, registration of trademarks, formation of general partnerships, and limited liability partnerships. So I want to introduce you first to the Democrat running for Secretary of State, Maggie Toulouse-Oliver, who will have 2 minutes for an opening statement.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you all for being here tonight. Thank you so much to the League of Women Voters for hosting this incredibly important forum. I'm always so blessed to work closely together with you here in Bernalillo County, and it's just a pleasure to be among all of you tonight. My name is Maggie Toulouse-Oliver. I'm the county clerk here in Bernalillo County. I've had the honor of serving in that role for the last 7.5 years, and I have to say, being county clerk has been the most wonderful job I could have ever imagined, because I was raised in a family that really instilled in me the value of our democracy and the value of participating in our democracy, and that voting could be the most high patriotic duty that we could exercise as citizens. And so when I was able to become county clerk, and as you all may recall, in Bernalillo County, there used to be some issues with the election process, and we focused very closely in my first 2 years on office and in office and resolving those issues and making sure we had an election process that the voters of Bernalillo County could trust, that election results came in on time on election night and that they were counted accurately. And then we've focused on expanding those opportunities for people to cast a ballot here in Bernalillo County. We've expanded access to registering to vote, to access to the ballot box with early voting and vote centers on election day. We've saved the taxpayers of Bernalillo County over $1 million per election in the process. I'm extremely proud of the work we've done, and we've even received some national recognition for that work, being recognized by the Presidential Commission on Election Administration as having some of the best practices in the country for the work we do here. I'm running for Secretary of State because I believe that every voter in the state, every eligible citizen, should have an equal opportunity to register to vote, that every voter should have equal access to the ballot box, and that every single one of those votes should be counted correctly. I'm very passionate about protecting the right to vote in New Mexico, and I want to bring that passion with me to the Secretary of State's office to ensure that every single voter in the state has that right to vote and has that right to vote protected. I thank you for your support and ask for your vote. Thank you.
Thank you. And now we will hear from Diana Duran, the current Secretary of State and the Republican candidate.
Thank you, Diane. Good evening. My name is Diana Duran, and I'm your Secretary of State. When I ran for this office 4 years ago, everyone knew what the Secretary of State's office was like at that time. Embarrassing news conferences, indictments, jail terms, missing federal funds, millions of your taxpayer dollars wasted and unaccounted for, pay to play, no accountability and no transparency. I promised to change all of that, and I have. I put an end to the self-promotion and waste. I got rid of government cars and gasoline on your dime. I drive my own car, and I pay for my own gas. I instituted a transparent contracting process, and we can account for every penny of your tax dollars that we spend. I've modernized the office, changing out obsolete equipment and software and replacing it with modern technology. I have taken our vote counting and reporting out of the hands of a private vendor. I've developed a new system so that we can track every vote tabulator in the state. We know the traffic at every voting convenience center in the state by individual machine. We have electronic records of every report. Our post-election audit used to have up to 2,600 errors and averaged over 1,000. Our last two election audits have had 6 and 0, and that is correct, 0 errors for the first time in the history of our state. And on July 1st, 2013, the corporation's division of the PRC was transferred to my office. It came with a 4-month backlog in corporate filings. In just 4 months, we reduced that turnaround time to 48 hours. I stopped the $150 expedited service fee that people were paying because we said we should do the people's work without charging them. I have kept my promises and moved this office forward. We do have leadership that's working, and I don't want us to go back to where we were 4 short years ago. Thank you.
Thank you all. And now we're going to move to questions from the audience. And the candidates will be allowed a minute and a half to answer each question. And the first question I have, we'll start with Ms. Riedel. The first question I have is going to be for both offices. And that is, what is your position on accepting campaign contributions from individuals and companies with whom your office may subsequently contract?
Well, I'll tell you, if it was up to me, I wouldn't have to accept campaign contributions from anybody. But unfortunately, it is part of the process. This is an expensive process. It's expensive for all of us. And so, you know, you have to do what needs to be done in order to achieve what I want to achieve, which is to be your next Attorney General. I think what you need to make sure of is that you're watching to make sure that the rules are complied with. The rules, when they're complied with, are there so that you all can see who's donating to each of us. And you couldn't run for statewide office without having somebody you might have to deal with make a contribution. What you need to do is when you talk to people and ask them to donate or support you for your campaign is tell them that that donation is not going to make a difference in the future in the decisions you make. That they're going to listen to what your positions are on things and decide whether or not you're the best candidate, but that they're not going to exercise any influence over you. And while that sounds like a pat answer, it's something I've done my whole life. I was a prosecutor in Las Cruces for years, which is really a small town. And sometimes you ended up prosecuting or having as victims or dealing with people that you've known for a long time. And you do that with honesty, and you deal with them the same way as you would deal with somebody you don't know, and the same way you handle this. If it's somebody that contributed to you, they're going to get the exact same treatment as somebody who couldn't afford to contribute with me. Thank you.
And now that same question to Mr. Balderas.
Well, it's clearly a concern. I mean, if you look at both the state and federal levels, clearly the influence of money on elections and campaigns is a risk to democracy. Hands down, I investigate fraud, and one of the areas that you quickly look at, there are three factors in risks of fraud or abuse, and political corruption is no different. But the opportunity and the lack of mitigating that opportunity to commit fraud and rationalize is the biggest risk when you look at a threat to democracy. And I think you need to look at alternatives. So we are in favor of a alternative public finance system or studying other reforms that can reduce the impact of money. I am supportive of free speech, but I also believe that every citizen should have equal influence over the system. And I'm also, as a former auditor and certified fraud examiner, very cognizant of the fact that I need independent systems within my agencies to make sure that merit and evaluations are independent of the elected official. But it is hard when campaigns are needing to raise money and candidates are focused on raising money so much. There's not an alternative system, but I am concerned about the risks that increased amounts of money plays in democracy, and especially with vendors and official acts.
Thank you. And we're going to have the same question for our Secretary of State candidates. What is your position on accepting campaign contributions from individuals and companies with whom your office may subsequently contract. And we'll start with Ms. Duran.
Thank you for that question. First of all, as can be expected, as Secretary of State, we come in contact with a number of people. As a Secretary of State, not just as it relates to elections, but as it relates to corporations, as you can imagine, there are many, many people who would like to contribute to my campaign that we come in contact with all the time. The Campaign Reporting Act is very clear as to where the limitations are as far as dollar amounts that you can receive, as far as what we can do. I do think that it is very critical that the voters in New Mexico understand where the candidate is coming from, which is why I continue to stress to everyone, I think it is very critically important as a Secretary of State that you be in as much as possible as nonpartisan as you can when it comes to dealing with the community out there, whether it be the business community or the lobbyists or the candidates, all of whom come in contact with the Secretary of State's office. So it's a difficult situation, and all I can say is it is what it is as far as campaign contributions being made. I do believe that as much as possible, when it comes to vendors, for instance, that work with the Secretary of State's office, I have not and will not accept contributions from those vendors to my campaign. And I think we need to be, it's a fine line, but I think we need to be very careful when we receive contributions from those vendors. But again, we come in contact with a lot of people that try to want to contribute.
Thank you. Ms. Toulouse-Oliver?
I share the view that it's very important for candidates who are going to be issuing contracts currently or in the future to avoid taking campaign contributions from people who do business with their office. And I've always followed the county's policies in that regard. I'm currently following the county's policies in that regard, even though I'm not a candidate for county office. And I also try to avoid taking contributions from anybody who's gonna do business with my current or future office. I think what it's important to acknowledge in this post-Citizens United world in which we're living in is that anybody can give an ungodly amount of money to influence anybody's campaign, and that you may not even know about it. The situation we're living in is I can take or not take a $500 contribution from a vendor who wants to get a contract with my office, but that person can turn around and spend $5 million to influence the outcome of my race or any other race. And so I think it's very important that we really increase the transparency laws in this state so that voters understand exactly who is spending money to influence which campaigns. I think there's a lot that can be done in the Secretary of State's office to increase transparency. Rules can be written. The CFIS system can be improved upon in order to do that. And I also think we need to look at state law, such as the type of law that Senator Worth has sponsored in the past, to try to tighten up some of those transparency rules. Letting the voters know who is spending the money on what is the most powerful tool that we can offer the voter, and I'd like to do that. Thank you.
Thank you all. I need to let the audience know that I left out a little bit of my script, and that is two things. If you want more cards to write questions on, please raise your hand. We have people who will give them to you. But also pass your questions to the end of the row because we have people who will pick them up and bring them up here. Thank you. Now we're going to go to questions for the Attorney General's office. We will start with Mr. Balderas. Other states have strong consumer protection divisions within their attorney general's offices. Would you favor strengthening the New Mexico Consumer Protection Division? If so, how?
You know, absolutely. It's one of the most important functions is being able to advocate for the consumer, predominantly because some of the consumers don't have the same negotiating power or the same amount of resources to combat big banks. Large institutions that have armies of lawyers. So the Attorney General's, one of their central most important missions is they are the public interest attorney for the state of New Mexico. And they really earn their paycheck and really show their moxie in how they protect consumers. And some of the biggest fights and battles will be waged in trying to make the economy more fair, make it a good economy for good businesses who want to treat consumers with fairness and respect and transparency, but also be able to step in as either a regulator, a prosecutor, an investigator, or even the public interest attorney to try to bring about positive changes. Real quickly, the way we are going to engage the Consumer Protection Division, we are going to be citizen-centric. It means that basically the citizen's agenda will be carried out. The largest risks in the community will be driven by what the Consumer Protection does, Division does, and that will be driven predominantly by where the consumers are being hurt the most. And that'll be the biggest reform that we bring if we're Attorney General.
Okay, Ms. Riedel? Riedel, I'm sorry.
It's Riedel, but that's okay, thank you.
I know, I blew it, sorry.
No, I actually have relatives who became Riedel, so. Anyway, the Consumer Protection Division is clearly a very important part of the Attorney General's office. There's no doubt about that. But we need to make sure that, I've seen it my whole life, that you want to make sure that in an effort to protect consumers that you don't actually harm consumers. And so that means that the Consumer Protection Division needs to be a really good watchdog for issues. I was just watching the news before I came over here tonight, and there was some guy who's calling around and demanding money from people and telling them they're going to be arrested. And yeah, those kinds of things, we really need to make sure that the Consumer Protection Division is on top of that and that that information is getting out and getting out in a way that it gets to those who are the most vulnerable. You know, I'm not somebody who reads Facebook every day, for example, and so if you put out a notice on Facebook, I might not get it, and I might be the one that's the most vulnerable to that. So we want to make sure that the information is getting out to consumers and to the ones who need it. Now, the other thing you have to do, though, in order to protect consumers, you have to make sure that businesses are being heard, that when there is a complaint against a business, that a business has a chance and an equal opportunity to explain what happened and perhaps to come to the table with both sides to discuss the issues and see if there can't be an equitable resolution short of somebody going to court, rather than it constantly just being a battle. So I think that you protect consumers best when you make sure that the economy is strong and you support small businesses as well.
Thank you both. Now we have a question for the Secretary of State candidates. And we will begin with Maggie Toulouse Oliver. What is your position on voter identification?
Thank you for that question. Currently in New Mexico, we have a voter ID law on the books, and a voter may provide a variety of different options of identification when they go to the polls. They can provide a physical photo ID, they can provide a utility bill or a bank statement, or they can provide a verbal verification. And right now, that's working in our state. In fact, we've seen very, very rare cases of voter impersonation at the polls. In fact, a recent study showed that over about 1 billion votes cast in a 12-year period here in the United States, about 31 cases of in-person voter impersonation potentially occurred. And so we know it's really rare. What we also know alternatively is that in places where these types of really strict photo voter ID laws are in place, that tens, hundreds of thousands of people are potentially disenfranchised because they don't have the exact type of paperwork they need to get that kind of ID. Now, I am strongly in favor of election integrity. I think it's very important. And I don't see how elections can have integrity unless every eligible voter is able to participate in the election process. I think that's vitally important. I think that voter fraud exists, and I think it exists over a variety of different mechanisms, in-person, absentee, voter registration. And in those rare cases, it's really important to be very aggressive, take it very seriously, refer it to, as I have done, the FBI and the DA and the Sheriff's Department, so law enforcement can enforce those laws, because it's a very serious penalty, a fourth-degree felony. Thank you.
Thank you. And that question now for Ms. Duran.
Thank you. First, let me just say that I have been, prior to my service as Secretary of State, I served 18 years in the New Mexico State Senate, and prior to that, I was county clerk in Otero County for served two terms as county clerk, and actually served, my total time working elections has been over 35 years. So let me just say that since I've been working elections, I have been a strong supporter of a voter ID requirement. We do not have a voter ID requirement in New Mexico. Anyone can show up at the polls and just announce their name, their year of birth, and their address, year of birth, and you can vote. There is no requirement. I believe that in order to instill confidence, to assure the people of the state of New Mexico that your vote will count and count only once, the people must believe that elections are fair and that we have integrity in the elections process. In order, and this is not just for someone who might be wanting to commit a criminal offense, as we saw in Sunland Park and as we've seen in Albuquerque in 2012, where the gentleman went and voted for his son's name because there was no voter ID requirement. So whether it's the criminal intent or just even an error, which actually happened to me in Otero County, by the poll worker trying to give you the wrong ballot, if we had a voter ID, a photo required voter ID requirement in New Mexico, that would stop all of those instances that we have seen. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Now we'll go to the Attorney General candidates, and we will begin with Ms. Riedel. Both your campaigns for Attorney General have talked about fighting crime. What does that entail? How will that impact the rest of your civil duties?
Well, fighting crime is one of the primary purposes, the primary jobs of the Attorney General's office, but in a different way than maybe you're familiar with, which is probably with your local district attorney's office. The Attorney General's office is the Attorney General themselves is the top cop of the state. They're in charge of all the criminal cases, and in fact, at one time, they were the prosecutor for the whole state. As, of course, as we got bigger, you couldn't continue to do that. So what the Attorney General's office handles now is all criminal appeals. So when your local district attorney works hard to convict a criminal in court, that appellate case comes to the Attorney General's office and it falls into the hands of the Assistant Attorney Generals under the auspices of the person who is the Attorney General and under their methods and their plan. And what I would really like to see happen with that is that there be a much closer working relationship than I ever saw as a prosecutor for 25 years with the Attorney General's office. More input, more understanding, more conversation between the two parties. Now, how does that impact the civil division? Well, this is a huge law firm. So there are attorneys that are doing the criminal law work and doing an excellent job there, and there are attorneys who are doing the civil law work over there and are doing an excellent job. So while my experience in law has primarily been in criminal law, I'm ready to take over the civil law aspect as well. I just want to make sure that when we say we're going to protect families, that you have the person in there best equipped and with the most experience to protect our families, both from crime and on the civil side.
Thank you. Mr. Balderas.
That's great. I started off as a prosecutor in my career and became a special prosecutor, then became a certified fraud examiner, then became a lawmaker and rewrote the criminal code. And so there's a lot of ways to bring about justice and fight crime, not just prosecuting. And the thing that I want to do that's different than most attorney generals in the past is I want to get smart on crime, which means that, yes, you coordinate with law enforcement, and when you need a heavy hammer with the most violent offenders, you go after them fiercely and ferociously to protect victims. But ultimately, we've had too many attorney generals who've been silent on getting smart on crime. You have law enforcement right now that need a stronger executive voice, and it's law enforcement that are even asking, we need more mental health resources. We don't have enough resources, and no one is an executive voice on getting smart on crime and reforming the justice system. We have prison overcrowding. Those are ways that you can attack crime, because ultimately what we're trying to prevent is criminals victimizing other members of your community. So there's a lot of areas like justice reform, advocating for better judges, working with law enforcement, but ultimately going to systemic causes that finally allow us to get smart on crime rather than just tough on crime. And I think you need to do both in this day and age to protect taxpayers and victims.
Thank you. We'll go back to the Secretary of State candidates and begin with Ms. Duran. Do you support same-day voter registration? And explain why or why not, please.
Thank you. No, I do not support same-day registration. One of the things, as I mentioned before, was that my goal has been, and my primary goal as Secretary of State, is to ensure that your vote will count and count only once. I believe that in the process of, certainly right now, without a voter ID requirement, when someone goes to the polls to vote, we have seen, and we have seen just as recently as the 2012 election, where someone has voted in someone else's place. If we have same-day registration, I come from a county which borders Texas, Otero County, we could very easily have someone drive in from Texas, register to vote in Otero County that day, vote, and immediately go right back to Texas and vote in Texas. I think that before we implement something like same-day registration, there needs to be a lot more research, security, some measures that would prevent someone from voting in both states. And as I mentioned before, I went and investigated in Sunland Park. We saw that very thing. During my administration, we take allegations of voter fraud and voter irregularity very seriously. I believe that it is my obligation to you, the voter, to assure you that I am doing everything I can to assure that there is integrity in the process, and same-day registration is not the way to go.
Thank you. Ms. Toulouse Oliver.
So yes, I do support same-day registration in New Mexico. And you know, I have to tell you, it's an election year, and so we're hearing a lot of horror stories, quite frankly, about voter fraud. And the Secretary of State is talking about the example in here in Bernalillo County in 2012, where my poll officials caught a guy red-handed trying to impersonate another voter, and that guy was prosecuted, and he was sentenced to, I think, the greatest penalty ever, which was he had to volunteer in community service, serving in an election capacity, serving, and I think worked for the Albuquerque election this year. But same-day registration is so valuable because so many voters are working people, they have children, they're caretaking for others. A lot of people aren't thinking about elections until right before election time, and often they miss. We have a 28-day deadline in New Mexico, which in today's day and age is frankly really arbitrary. It was important in a day when we were having to hand transcribe voter rosters. We don't have to do that anymore. Almost everything we do is electronic. In fact, there's no reason why we can't have electronic poll books at every single polling location in New Mexico. And so to enable voters to register and vote in the precinct where they live on election day is really important. We've seen in other states where this happens, there is no voter fraud resulting from same-day registration. What this could do is help us clean up our records, and it could help assist voters to vote in their home precinct where they live and not be voting away in precincts where they didn't live before, or perhaps miss the opportunity to vote altogether, which would be, in my view, a travesty. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll go to a question for the Attorney General candidates, and we'll begin with Mr. Balderas. And not surprisingly, we have a couple of questions having to do with the behavioral health audits. In view of the behavioral health provider audit and the closing of clinics, what options would you have as Attorney General to deal with this situation? Will you continue the secrecy?
You know, I've been a vocal advocate of more transparency. The auditor experience has allowed me to work with every law enforcement agency at every level in the state of New Mexico, FBI, U.S. Attorney, local prosecutors, and we all kind of agree that you can fight crime and you can investigate in a transparent, efficient, and timely manner without upending a whole fragile system in government. And I think it's been a debacle. I think it's a learning moment, and I think the Attorney General's next task for either one of us is going to be to reform that system in a way that first and foremost targets waste, fraud, and abuse, but respects the patient and the services that need to be provided and delivered in the utmost respect. And that's what the AG needs to be focused on. And there's little simple things that we can do. For instance, there were no certified fraud examiners used in that audit. I had to subpoena the court of law to get the report of that audit. And there wasn't a collective focus from HSD, the administration, our office. There should have been more collaboration in attacking that that issue. And it's really put New Mexico at risk at lawsuits and ultimately lowered morale on many sides. And so the AG needs to take a central role moving forward at improving the Medicaid fraud division at the office and ultimately being a strong executive voice in those reforms.
Thank you. Ms. Riedel.
I, unlike the auditor, have not seen the audits because I'm just like you. I'm just a citizen right now. I want to be the Attorney General because this needs to be fixed. There should have been audits long before there were these audits that we should have known that this was going on. We needed to be a strong watchdog on this. The Attorney General's office needed to take a strong stand. What needs to happen now is precisely and exactly the opposite of what our current Attorney General said is going to happen, which is that it's going to take 6 to 7 years to investigate that. There is no way it's going to take 6 to 7 years. This is something that we can respond to quickly. When there is fraud, when there is an allegation of some kind of abuse of the public trust, it needs to be acted on quickly, it needs to be acted on with integrity, and it needs to be acted on in a way that you all get a satisfactory answer. It's time to stop the, we indicted somebody 7 years ago, and now we're having to dismiss them, and the public never gets to know whether or not they did something wrong. It's time to stop, we indicted the previous Secretary of State for public corruption crimes, and then it got dismissed by the court because we diddled around with it too long, and now the public never gets to know, and those people never get to clear their name if that's what was going to happen. So in this particular case, in this behavioral health issue, this needs to be acted on quickly, and it needs to be acted on with somebody who's been doing this for 25 years and knows how to investigate a case and how to get it to court.
Going on to the Secretary of State candidates, Ms. Oliver, you will go first. What can you do to improve the implementation of the motor voter law?
Thank you for the question. So as many of you may or may not know, currently the numbers coming from motor vehicle divisions to county clerk's offices in terms of voter registrations in the state are currently suffering as well below average. And it's not exactly clear what the cause of this is. In fact, in 2013, I helped advocate very heavily for a law that would automate that process so that when an individual goes into the motor vehicle division to apply for or to conduct any sort of business, they are simultaneously offered an opportunity to register or update their voter registration, and then that is transmitted electronically to our offices. And the reason for that is because we weren't receiving many of those. In fact, my office, and I know the Secretary of State's office also in 2012, got a lot of complaints from voters who did not, who were not able to vote, because they thought they registered at motor vehicle and it never got to us. And so the law, the automating the process, went into effect earlier this year, and it was quickly done away with, not the law, but the actual process, because what we saw in our offices is that the numbers went from around an average here in Bernalillo of 282 voter registrations a month down to well below 50. And I know the Secretary of State's office said, well, we're going to go back to paper now, and we're still getting lower than average. So it's really important for the Secretary of State's office to work really closely with the Motor Vehicle Division to make sure they're doing that job, make sure they're offering those opportunities to vote. And I think it's going to be one of my priorities when I come into office. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Duran.
Thank you for that question. First, let me explain that since I came into office, since 2010, although we've only gained in population by 1%, I need to point out to you that voter registration is up 7%. We have 129,000 more people who have registered to vote under my administration since I came into office since 2010. I also want you to know that I have been involved, very intimately involved and closely involved with the legislature in improving and promoting online registration. We were involved in the process where Motor Vehicle Division, of course, had began the online voter registration. When we began realizing that there was an issue with them, we immediately got our legal counsels together, worked on that, and not just put in place paper forms, but also the requirement that in addition to having kiosks available at the Motor Vehicle Division offices, they could also offer the paper forms. But we didn't stop there. We continue to promote and work with the legislature to have online voter registration. I've been a strong proponent of that and will continue to work with the legislature going into 2015. With July 1st of 2015, we will be working very carefully and closely, not only with Motor Vehicle Division, but within my office, to offer online voter registration. So that is what we see moving forward in improving, not just at Motor Vehicle, but in the Secretary of State's office. We will have online registration. Thank you.
Thank you.